Rabbi Cohen is going to speak. Is be speaking about BiPAPs, and I know that there are many, many people within the synagogue who have BiPAP. Both of my sons use a BiPAP, and my daughter, when she was still alive, she used a BiPAP. So something that we know very well. So, so Rabbi Cohen, it's all yours.
All right, thank you. So actually, cards on the table, we're actually not really going to get to BiPAP this week. That's really going to be the focus of next week's topic. And that's just because, once again, a lot of this happened to us before when we were talking about the cochlear implants, but we have a limited amount of sources. So we have to use what we have and work from there. So the sources that we do have are primarily focused on sensors, on motion sensors. We're going to utilize the principles from there to then move on next week to hopefully to talk about BiPAPs and some other medical devices as well. So just for the broad categorizations of what we're doing here, so up until now, we've been discussing medical devices, sensory medical devices like the cochlear implant. What we could have theoretically added to that conversation, although I decided to skip it, was a prosthetic eye, again, what's considered seeing in halacha. And also talking, it's not really in action per se. It's defining one specific, I guess, something that we need in halacha, how do you make sound? So we have to also define that. That's what we've been doing up until now. Now we're really sort of switching gears, and it's, I guess, like a new section sort of. And that is, we're trying to determine what is considered a maisa in halacha, what's considered action in halacha. You know, in general, we'll get into specifics later. But in general, in order to be, let's say, chayev for doing something on Shabbos, you have to do a maisa. In order to, shake lulav, you have to do a maisa. There's a lot of things in halacha that require some form of input, of muscular movement, of some sort of action on the part of the person. So really what we want to do is we want to define what is the limit of what is considered maisa. The reason why that's important is outside of medical devices, this comes up with obviously motion sensors. You're not really opening up the door. You're walking and the door is opening up. Just in general, the whole concept of a smart home in general, the whole ecosystem of a smart home, all the different devices, you know, the thermostats regulate temperature based on the amount of people in the room, lights that turn on, radios that go on when you walk in front of them, screens that turn on if you're walking in front of them. These are all, again, not something that you are doing specifically to cause them to turn on. They're turning on because of your presence. So similarly, and that's what we'll hopefully get to, that's then hopefully next week, is BiPAPs. When you're breathing with using a machine, is that really considered, if you're changing BiPAP, not really, but some of the other devices, they change based on your breathing rate. So is the fact that your breathing rate changes and causing the machine to adapt accordingly, is that maybe something that would be usher to do on Shabbos because you are your body, so to speak, is causing something to change, causing electrical current to change? Maybe that's something that wouldn't be allowed. The last one, which we probably won't end up discussing, are things like prosthetic limbs, more advanced prosthetic limbs. The way they work is, basically, the idea, at least, there's, you know, a lot of prototypes that they're not, I don't think they're exactly things that people use in markets in general. But the way we're trying to get them to work is that basically they're connected to the brain and the brain is controlling them, right? My prosthetic arm isn't because my muscle, you know, the upper arm muscle is moving the lower arm muscle and there's some sort of signal going through. There's a signal directly from the brain controlling that arm. So is that considered a maisa in halacha? So I really think from all the different examples that I just gave, we basically have, we can categorize it to three different groups. Things like that evolved with the smart home ecosystem, those are what I would call a non-specific action, right? It's the fact that I walked into the room, something turned on. So is that considered a maisa in halacha? For BiPAP and things that we can classify in that category, the question is biological action, right? My body is just part of its normal function, is having something change. Is that considered a maisa in halacha? And then lastly, with prosthetic limbs, and things that function similarly to that, it's called for lack of a better term, thinking action, right? I think something else happens. Is that considered a ma'aseh halacha? These are really the three different categories. And again, like I mentioned before, the only most of the sources, the where we can really, you know, discuss a lot of different opinions, is really only by the smart home, by non-specific action. There's a lot of discussion about motion sensors and things similar to that, nature, and how we consider them in halacha. So we're going to start there, and that will hopefully provide the background to be able to continue the conversation next week. So as far as motion sensors are concerned, so this goes back very early. I think the earliest source is Rabbi Padua. He's an English rabbi. I think he lived in the early 1900s. These sources are very early on. You should just the history, that's interesting. A lot of these sources originally start talking about motion sensors, and then the conversation at one point shifts to video cameras, because everyone wants, especially in Israel, everybody wants to go to the Kotel on Shabbos, and there's video cameras all over. You probably can't really walk anywhere nowadays without some sort of video camera recording you. But the question was, can you go to the Kotel? There's video cameras all over the place. Maybe that's a problem on Shabbos because your motion's being recorded. You're being recorded on video. So Rabbi Padua argues that motion detectors are permissible. In other words, if I'm walking by someone's house, I know they have a motion detector and the light will turn on. It's okay for me to walk by that house. He gives two reasons. One is based on the Aruch, who argues that psik resha, now, he makes the case that it's psik resha delay nichale. What that means is psik resha literally means you remove the head of a chicken. Apparently, kids used to play soccer or whatever it was with the head of chickens. So as part of the game for the kids, they used to remove the head of the chicken. Now, what happens when you remove the head of a chicken? In general, the chicken dies. So chicken dying is something that killing a chicken is not allowed on Shabbos. So it's a psik resha, right? I'm not intending to kill the chicken. Just while I am getting this toy for my kids, I happen to have killed the chicken. So it's a psik resha. And more significantly, it's lo nichale. In other words, it's not something that I actually want. When I kill the chicken, when I take that, remove, decapitate the chicken because I want my kids to play with it, then I want the head. But here it's lo nichale. I couldn't care less if the light goes on. So using this Aruch, who argues that psik resha lo nichale is permissible, he argues that it would be allowed to walk in front of a motion sensor. He also utilizes a Rashba, makes a similar argument. The Rashba argues that if, I don't know exactly where you're living, but if a deer happened to walk into your house and there's a deer inside, are you allowed to close the door or not? If you're closing the door, you're capturing the deer. Hunting, capturing deer on Shabbos is not allowed. But I couldn't care less about the deer in my house. I'm closing the door because it's cold outside, right? So the Rashba says you're allowed to close the door. So using the combination of these two, he argues that you would be allowed to walk in front of these sensors. So the first problem with his argument is he gave two nice sources, but neither one of them are quoted in Shulchan Aruch, right? We don't actually paskin like them. So it's a little bit weird that he uses them to allow going in front of a motion sensor. But okay, fine. You know what? We'll give it to him. He's using both. He says, you know, I don't really care about the light. He has two of them. He has two different sources, the combination of the two. Fine. We'll give it to him. There's a more fundamental problem with his argument, though, and that is that he's assuming it's lo nichale. He's assuming I don't want the light to turn on. Very often when I'm walking in front of my friend's house, I appreciate the light going on. I can't see anything. All of a sudden, now the light went on. Now I can see what I'm doing. It's great. The place was pitch dark without it. So it's not an argument. It's not a problem really with this halachic argument. It's more with the facts. He's assuming that it's not wanted. Very likely is wanted. Rabbi Wasner, Rabbi Yochanan Wasner, who's someone who's currently alive, not the Rabbi Wasner we're going to talk about later on in this year, he argues that lo nichale. It's not something that I want. Because when I walk by your house, why do you have the light on there? It's for your security. It's for your safety. I don't like being put under suspicion when I walk by your house. The light goes on and you look out the window. Who's trying to break in? I don't appreciate that. Okay, fine. It's not really a halachic argument. It's not particularly interesting. You know, you can take a survey of the psychological survey of people and try to determine whether or not most people, when they walk by someone's light, do they appreciate the extra light or do not appreciate the fact that, you know, the homeowner might think they're invading them and is looking at them suspiciously. Okay, not so interesting, but we at least have Padua's argument that with the combination of these two, the Aruch and the Rajba, he has room to be lenient. Rai Kessa makes the case that the reason why I'm allowed to walk in front of one of these lights is because I don't know what's going to result in that light turning on, meaning I don't know which step will cause the light to turn on. I know if I walk by this house, the light will turn on. I don't know at what point that will happen. In that case, so it's not like you know, a specific action. So it's fine and there's no problem. Rav Obrach makes the case that it's an indirect psik resha. In other words, it's not about nichale or not nichale. Do I want it? Do I not want it? It's not really, it's by psik resha in general, like with a case of our chicken, right? I cut off the chicken's head. Here, I'm not going around and turning on the light. I happen to walk by a sensor that turned on a light. So he's arguing that that would be permitted. It's indirect. Indirect psik resha is mutter, is allowed to do on Shabbos. Now, importantly, most of these sources, it sounds like at least from their arguments, that they're only going to really allow you to turn on, to utilize these sensors when it's not your house. When it's your house, they won't let you turn it on. They won't let you walk by it. Just to take, let's say, Rapado's example, he argues that it's lo nichale. If it's your house, obviously it's nichale. Otherwise, why do you have the sensor here? You should have gotten rid of the sensor, for example. Or maybe Rav Kessler's argument, you don't know which step will turn it on. Chances are, if you live there, you do know which step will turn it on. It's these sources are really differentiating between your house versus your friend's house. My house, it would not be allowed, but my friend's house, it would be okay. Rabbi Rosen, who we spoke about last time, he was the editor of Tchumen. He died recently. He argues that motion sensors, I'm not allowed to turn on the light on Shabbos by flipping the switch, I'm also not allowed to utilize a motion sensor. He makes the case that a psik resha, by definition, means doing something in a non-normal fashion. When I am turning on the light by using the motion sensor, that is the normal way to use a motion sensor. The way I'm using a motion, the way you use utilize a sensor is you walk in front of it and the light turns on. That's exactly what your intentions were. That's exactly what you did. There's really no reason to assume that they would be allowed because of some sort of psik resha. So I Rosen not only would argue that you're not allowed to use them in your own house, he also made the case that even in my friend's house, I'm not allowed to have it turn on. If I know that you have a motion sensor, I have to cross the street and walk on the other side of the street to not turn on the light. There is something very fundamental with the argument that everybody here is making up until now, right? What we're trying to argue, what we introduced this year with, is that we're going to be discussing what is a ma'isa in halacha, what's considered action in halacha. All these authorities have to assume that there's some sort of ma'isa here, right? You're not chayav for a malacha if there was no ma'isa, right? You can't possibly, action on Shabbos cannot be prohibited if there isn't a malacha involved. There isn't some sort of action. They have to argue that there's an action. So necessarily, when you're talking about sensors, by motion sensors, what their argument will have to be is that in order to be the action that you're doing that is causing you to be chayiv on Shabbos is the fact that you walked in front of the sensor. It's the walking in front of the sensor that results in that's the action that causes the light to turn on. It's a weird way to turn on a light. Most people turn on a light by flipping a switch. I turn on a light by walking. It's irrelevant, right? The point is I turned on the light and that was the action. I walked. My walking caused the light to turn on. This is all based on a Gemara in Shabbos that, right, it says that the Pasuk says you can't do any melacha on Shabbos. You can't do any melacha, you can't do any ma'isa on Shabbos. So it's specifically limiting things on Shabbos that involve some sort of action. So you have to have an action. And therefore, it has to be. There is no other way they can make their case unless they argue that walking in front of the censor is the ma'isa that is obligating you, that is making the same science prohibited to do on Shabbos. Rav Osner, it's a novel idea because nobody else said it before him, but it's a little obvious if you think about it, I think, right? He argues that if the action that you're doing is something that's not normally forbidden, even though the result might be something that's forbidden, you can't say that that's something that's prohibited on Shabbos. In other words, when I'm walking down the street in general, walking is not something that's prohibited on Shabbos. Walking is walking. It's not a maisa that's chayv in Shabbos. Don't confuse me and tell me that if you walk outside of a tchum, then you are chayv for something on Shabbos. Walking outside of a tchum is its own thing, own category. You know, don't ask me from there. But in general, right, walking is not a maisa. It's not something that is a specific action that is doing a malacha. Therefore, he makes the case that walking in front of the sensors would be completely permitted. There's absolutely nothing wrong with it. Activating a sensor involves walking in front of the sensor. I at no point had a maisa did any action that was prohibited on Shabbos, and therefore it cannot be considered a maisa, and it would be mutter to walk in front of one of these sensors. I want to point out that this is Rav Vosner has like four or five pieces on this. In one of his last tshuvas, he actually he says only if it's unintentional. If you intentionally did it, then he doesn't think it's not considered a maisa. It's not really clear why. His reasoning here is great, irrespective of everything else. I'm not really sure why he changed his mind at the end. But leaving that aside, his argument is a great argument, and I think it makes a lot of sense. Rav Bleich also has an essay where he basically defends Rav Osner's position. Everyone attacked Rav Osner for this. Nobody agreed with him. Rav Bleich supports his position, though, because very simply, he tries to define what is a maisa in halacha, which is really what we want. So the problem is, I don't really have any Gemara or any source at all that defines what is a maisa in halacha. So we have to guess. We have to bring whatever, you know, the sources that we have and try to infer it from there. So as far as talking is concerned, talking is complicated. Is talking considered a maisa or not? So I have three Gemaras in regards to talking, at least. I have a Gemara in Sanhedrin where Rabbi Kiva argues with the Chachamim. Basically, you are in case where someone is committing blasphemy. He's cursing Hashem or something like that. And he's doing it on, he did it unintentionally, right? So if you're doing it unintentionally, then you should be chayav a karban. You can only be chayav a karban if you do a maisa. You can't be chayav a karban for doing an avera that doesn't involve an action. So there's an argument with the Akiva and the sages and the Chachamim whether or not moving your lips is considered the maisa. Talking in general is not a maisa. You're just expelling air. There's no real action there. But maybe because my lips move up and down, maybe that's the maisa. Maybe that's what's considered, that's what the action is. So it's an argument there. The Gemara Makas, it doesn't mention an argument. He just assumes that you can't give Malkus, you can't whip somebody. Again, you can only whip somebody, Bezdin can only give 39 lashes if you do a prohibition that has a Maisa. The Gemara Makas says you can't get Malkus for false testimony because there's no action. All you did was talk. And then we have a Gemara above Mitzia that argues that again gives another Machlokas between Reish Lakish and Rav Yochanan. Reish Lakish argues that speaking that results in a prohibited act from occurring. In that case, it was you have an animal that's grazing. In general, when you have an animal that's, sorry, not grazing, when you have an animal that you're using the animal to plow, right, you're not allowed to muzzle the animal. You have to let the animal eat. So if the animal, you're using the animal to plow and you're yelling at it to scare it so it won't eat, Rabbi Shlokish argues that's not prohibited because you didn't do a maisa. In order to do something that is usur, you have to do some sort of action. Rabbi Yochanan disagrees. Rabbi Yochanan thinks that talking can be considered an action. My point is that there are a bunch of Gemaras that there are arguments in a bunch of Gemaras about whether or not talking can be considered a maisa. It's not really helpful for our discussion at all, but it is just interesting. I just want to point out this is very important for whether or not you're allowed to speak to Google or to Siri on Shabbos, right? If talking is considered a maisa, then it would be usher to speak to one of these devices on Shabbos. If talking is not a maisa, then potentially you would be allowed to speak to one of these devices on Shabbos. You'd be allowed to talk to Siri, allowed to talk to Google, and ask them to do things for you. There are a couple of other, some other interesting arguments, just again, as complete aside, that doesn't have anything really to do with this. But there are some, at least one person I saw made the case, which I don't understand at all, but there's a halacha is a bit of a strong word, but there's this idea on Shabbos that you're not allowed to speak the same way on Shabbos that you do during the week, right? It's maybe Odin Dechol or something like that. It's like something of doing, of not acting like during the work week on Shabbos. So he makes the case that talking, that's acting like during the work week. All right, whatever. I don't really know what to do with that. I'm not particularly impressed with that argument. But the more serious halachic argument is whether or not talking could be considered an action. And based on that, it'll be interesting to know whether or not you could speak to one of these devices on Shabbos. Getting back to what we want to know, what is actually considered a ma'isa. So for talking, it's debatable. We don't have a clear answer. Regardless, it's a little bit irrelevant for as far as medical devices and as far as the sensors, which we're specifically thinking about today, are concerned. We do, however, have an interesting Gemara in Bava Kamma. The Gemara in Bava Kamma is discussing a case of, there's a bench, five people were sitting on the bench, the sixth person showed up, sat on the bench broke. Question is, who's responsible, who has to pay? So Rabbeinu Tam and Tosfos argues that they're all responsible. The argument is fascinating. So the question is, what makes them all responsible? It can't be that they're responsible because they sat down, because person one through five didn't do anything wrong. They sat down on a bench that could support their weight. So there can't be anything wrong with the fact that they sat. So it broke by number six. There was no action. One through five never did an action that would have resulted in something that was that they'd have to pay back for. It can't either be, the other option would be that when number six got sat down, anyone from one through five should have gotten up just to reduce the load. But that also, except according to the Rashba, who has an interesting position on this, but according to everybody else in the world, passive action, you can't be responsible for passive action. Passive action is not something that can make you chayav in having to pay back. So that can't either be the option, which means that according to Rabbeinu Tam, the only reason why one through everyone here is responsible to pay the owner of the bench back is he must consider the body weight of the people some sort of action. The fact that you weigh a certain amount, you have the gravitational pull, you exert a certain force, that force is considered an action of halacha, and body weight is something that I can hold you responsible for. In a similar case, that if I'm just standing still and you push me over, and in so doing, there's a baby lying on the side and I crush the baby and I kill the baby, right? I would be responsible because my body weight killed the baby, right? So there is this concept, at least, that body weight can be considered a ma'isa on Shabbos. What's important, though, is that what Tosfos specifically did is highlighted that body weight is something that can be considered chayav on Shabbos. That limits biological function and the way my body works to weight. Anything else that my body does, let's say releasing temperature, I have a certain releasing thermal temperature, right? I emit heat. I do all these other biological functions. I can't be held responsible for. Those don't reach the threshold of being chayev in Maisa and Shabbos. This is really just inferring in Tosfos and trying to understand Rabbeinu Tam. That's where we're reaching this conclusion. I do, at the very least, have a Ralbag. Rabag in Parsha Shmos that says that how do I know I'm allowed to eat on Shabbos? In theory, it should be usher to eat. Why? Because every time I take a bite of food, I'm grinding the food when I'm chewing it. When it gets into my stomach, I'm doing some sort of lush. I'm eating the food. I'm mixing it up with some sort of saliva. I'm basically making some sort of dough, weird looking dough, but I'm making some sort of dough. Living would be every time my body emits heat, I'm causing maybe some sort of ash or something like that. I'm causing some sort of fire to occur. All these different biological functions should have been usher on Shabbos based on the Lamed Tes Melachos. They all fit into categories. And so therefore he argues that it must be that biological function, that just surviving, living, that's not something that I can be held responsible for. Which brings us to discussing the different types of motion sensors. There are two types of motion sensors. Broadly, there are two types of motion sensors that I could tell. One is there are active sensors and there are passive sensors. The way active sensors work is that basically they emit ultrasound waves, and the ultrasound waves just bounce back. And that's when the sensor reads the waves. So in general, it's reading waves. Whenever someone walks in the path of the ultrasound waves, then it bounces back earlier because something got in its way. So it bounced back earlier. The sensor registers that something is there, and then either opens the door, turns on the light, whatever it is that it needs to occur. The other type of sensor is a passive sensor. Passive sensors, they register the heat. They are much more sensitive to humans. And basically, they're programmed to register heat within a certain threshold. So they register the heat that's emitting off people. So if I have a temperature, whatever it is, 97 degrees, I walk in front of this sensor, this sensor registers my body heat and recognizes that there's a person here and opens up the door. Now, I understand the argument between Rav Osner, Rav Bleich, and everybody else. I can potentially understand this argument if we're talking about inactive sensor. Because then the case is they're arguing about whether or not the fact that I walked in front of the sensor caused the ultrasound now, the ultrasound wave to bounce back earlier. Maybe that's the action, the fact that I walked in front of it. And they're just disagreeing is the fact that I, you know, blocked the ultrasound wave. They're arguing about whether or not that's considered a MISA. Okay, fine. I can hear two sides to that argument. I have a very hard time hearing two sides to that argument when you're discussing passive sensors. Because passive sensors, they're just registering the heat. It's irrelevant that you're not blocking anything. You just showed up, it registered your body heat, and then it opened up the door. So the fact that it's registering your temperature, especially given the sources that we just mentioned, it has nothing to do with the fact that you're walking. It has to do with what your body generates, the heat that your body's generating. I have a hard time understanding how that could be considered a maisa in halacha. There's, again, what they would obviously have to say, because they are clearly, a lot of these sources are at least clearly aware that there are two different types of sensors, and they still, Rav Rosen definitely recognizes that there are two types of sensors, and he still says that you're not allowed to utilize either sensor. He must argue, he still will maintain the same argument, that walking in front of the sensor and allowing the sensor to register my temperature, that is what is usher on Shabbos. That's what would be prohibited. Now, this is all, you know, sensors, whatever. This is all old stuff. This actually, last year, became very relevant because what happened was, I mean, in Israel and America as well, they installed all these automatic, they checked everyone's temperature as they were walking to the hospital automatically, right? They had these sensors up, and you have these computer screens, these monitors, right? That A, it showed a video of the person walking up. And on top of each person, it would show the temperature. At least the Rambam Hospital in Israel definitely had it. I think a bunch of hospitals in Israel apparently had this. So Rabbi Rubin, who has a kollel which published Orchas Shabbos, it's this great new Hilchos Shabbos series of books. I ended up basically they're friendly with someone who was involved in the kollel in Haifa, which. I knew me from the medical school, and we ended up including me in this email chain where they were arguing at least that it's prohibited to walk into hospitals on Shabbos for a couple of reasons. One is it's not lo nichale, right? Up until now, our sources that were permitting outside of Rav Osner, their argument was it's not nichale. I don't want it in the hospital. You do want it when you're walking to the hospital because you want to make sure that nobody else has COVID when you're walking into the hospital. So you want them to check the temperature. It's for your own good that they're checking your temperature. So that's number one. Number two, they had a problem because you're causing text to appear, right? When you walk in, it shows it shows your temperature. You're causing text to appear. And number three, you're also measuring temperature. Because measuring is a problem on Shabbos. So you're measuring temperature and that's an issue. Now, obviously, these sensors, by the way, are the passive sensors. But these are the heat sensors. They're measuring temperature. They're not using ultrasound. They're checking the heat that you're generating. So there's a couple of interesting points with this. So first of all, I have a the first problem is they're making the case that it's not nichale. I'm not sure if that's true. It is not nichale for me. I don't care if they check my temperature. I know I'm fine. I want them to check everybody else's temperature. When they're checking my temperature, I couldn't care less. So I'm not really sure it's so obvious that it's nichale, right? That it is something that I want. I don't want you to check my temperature. Why are you bothering me? I use my thermostat at home. I know I'm fine. So the first argument is, I'm not sure if that's so obvious. As far as the second argument with causing text to appear, so this is a whole other conversation, which we're definitely not going to have now. I'll just quickly say that it's not so obvious that causing text to appear would be a problem with ksiva, of writing on Shabbos. It's not so obvious that there's a problem with writing on Shabbos when you're talking about computers. Writing is when you're putting something permanent ink on a paper. When you're, you know, just making electrons move around to cause some sort of display to change, it's not so clear that that's a problem on Shabbos. So that's the one line I'll say on that point. And the third one is interesting for us again, because we're interested in what's considered a maisa on Shabbos. is measuring temperature something that's usher on Shabbos? Because measuring temperature, it's not like I'm doing an action. All it's doing is measuring my body heat. That's not something that I do. So is that something that's prohibited on Shabbos? So it's very interesting. It's definitely very interesting that Reuven's Kollel said it was a problem, because Moshe Feinstein and a lot of other people all have a response where they argue that measuring temperature on Shabbos is permitted, not for anything that I just said, for a totally different reason. They just argue that measuring in the Mishkan, the measuring means, you know, you're measuring weights, you're measuring how much liquid you're putting in something else. Measuring temperature is not measuring, it's not halachic measuring. So it's completely irrelevant. It's not something that's usher on Shabbos at all. Reb Lech doesn't agree with him, and he would argue, I would assume that he could argue that he doesn't think that it's measuring, that the problem is not measuring, it is measuring. The reason why you're not hired for the measuring is because your body temperature is what caused the thermostat to change, is what caused the thermometer to change. That's not action. I didn't do any action that's chayav on Shabbos. All I did was put the thermostat in, thermometer in my mouth, and my body heat, which I'm not responsible for, which is not an action on Shabbos, that caused it to change. That's not something that I could be responsible for. Also, this was particularly interesting for me because the med students by us, when we were in second year, when we were practicing for a clinical, so we had OSCEs, we all had to, it's the practical test, we all had to practice taking blood pressure and listening to heart murmurs and all that sort of stuff. So the best time to practice was always, we always had a kiddush together on Shabbos. The best time to practice, you had a lot of volunteers, everyone had plenty of time. They wanted to practice on Shabbos after kiddush. So according to Moshe Feinstein, which I was aware of at the time, I assumed that I told him that I think it should be totally fine. There's nothing wrong with it. That's not considered measuring, as measuring is defined in the Mishkan, and therefore there's no problem. But if you think about Reb Leif's position, where you're thinking about how the reason why checking your temperature should be allowed is because all you're doing is generating heat is not a maisa. Blood pressure, checking your blood pressure would be a problem, because checking your blood pressure is not passive, you know, passively checking pressure. You are actively causing the pressure by squeezing the strap around the arm. That's what's causing the pressure. You did something. You made a maisa. And if that is, and if you assume that that's considered measuring on Shabbos, it would be prohibited for that reason. So that's an interesting thing that came up, at least for us, when we were talking about it. So what I really wanted to point out from all of this. So first of all, we have our three positions here. What we have is three different ways of thinking about these sensors. We have either they're totally not allowed, totally allowed, or something in between, depends on whether or not it's yours. According to the positions that we have, according to Reb Leich and Reb Wasner's position, at least Reb Wasner's original position, it makes a lot of sense why it would be totally allowed. You're not doing any action here. There was no maisa being done. All it was biological function. Again, that's why I think there would be a difference between an active sensor and the passive sensors, where if you're only registering heat, I have a very hard time understanding why these other Rabbanim would say that it's not allowed. That then really brings us to where this is really the background, the setup that I really want to have for our next year, which is for BiPAP and machines like that, where basically these machines are all responding to biological functions. They're responding to your respiratory rate or things like that. So in that case, we have, at least from Reb Leich, we have this concept that biological function is not considered a maisa and Shabbos, and it's not considered a problem. So then it would be interesting, because there are a lot of different types of these devices. Some of them respond to your breathing, some of them don't. So the way exactly they work, it gets very technical, which I want to discuss more next week, can be very important in halacha and can make a big difference with whether or not we consider it a maisa on Shabbos. The other thing which I'm going to mention here, because I don't know where else to talk about it, is there is also something called eye tracking technology. Basically, it's for locked-in syndrome patients, right? Locked-in syndrome patients are patients that are basically, they're completely paralyzed. They can't move. They can't do anything, are almost completely paralyzed and almost can't move or can't do anything, but they're totally conscious. They're totally awake. But what they can do, just because of the way the nerves enter the brainstem, they can move their eyes up and down. That's the limited function that they can do. So the trick is, what a lot of these technologies try to do is they try to track the eyes moving up and down, so that you can at least get basic, communicate somehow with the patient, get the patient to say yes or no, and things like that. There was, I think it's an episode of House, in one of the episodes, he uses this technology. But basically, according to Ablaif and Rav Azar, definitely according to everybody else, is considered an action. But even according to Ablaif and Rav Azar, I just want to point out there's a significant difference, right? When we're talking about biological function, we're talking about heat, we're talking about breathing, we're talking about chewing. We're not talking about purposely moving my eyes in order to communicate with something. That would be considered a maisa, and that's a different category altogether. And those things, again, there's countless of other reasons to permit a locked-in syndrome patient to be allowed to communicate on Shabbos using one of these things. He's a chola, whatever it is. But leaving all that aside, if it just, you know, you or I wanted for whatever reason to be using technology that involved eye movement, that would definitely be considered a maisa on Shabbos. And that would not be allowed. Thank you for listening. How did I do? Any questions? Any?
Wow.
Yeah.
The idea of not knowing precisely which step will trigger the light.
Mm-hmm.
I remember something about grama switches, and part of the justification for using them is because of that, because there's some kind of random pulsing and you aren't, it's indirect enough. Has that thinking changed?
What do you mean, has that thinking changed?
Okay. I'm also a special needs parent, and at the beginning, some of these things were, oh, now we can do this, and you don't have to do it left-handed upside down, and you don't have to worry about it. You don't have to get a flat circle because here's this thing. And then 6 months later, someone says, no, you can't use the thing anymore. It's bad to use it. And it just keeps, thankfully, we don't have to use that anymore. But it seems to me that the thinking at the very highest levels keeps changing on some of these issues.
Right. I'm a little nervous of exactly how to answer your question. Put it very broadly speaking, okay? I think sometimes a lot of these things change just because, it depends who's speaking when, and B, it depends on how well whoever's speaking it understands the technology. And a lot of times what ends up happening is sometimes someone who says something about one of these devices, it's not that they necessarily went and investigated how the device worked. It's they're given information and they respond to the information that's given to them. So very often you end up with conflicting views from even the same person, because each time someone went over to them and presented to them with certain set of facts, it was a different set of facts each time. So each time they said something different. I have to say that, for example, Shlomo Zalman Orbach is just a master of this, that he does not, it's very hard to find a tshuva where he does something like that. He's a model posik. It was unbelievable how much he had the resources to really understand how a lot of these things worked. Especially with electricity related stuff. He just knew how it worked and he understood it. And he had the Talmudic training, the halachic background, to be able to give good responses. He was just like, he's just, you know, prime example of like the role model that we should all strive to follow when answering one of these questions is clearly like Rosh Hashanah Zalman. He's amazing when you're reading his tshuva. It's very, very often you read a tshuva from somebody and like the first question you have to ask yourself is, okay, did he understand, did he know the facts, or were the facts different? With Rosh Hashanah Zalman, you should obviously also do that. But it very rarely have I had the, at least I just don't know enough of his tshuvas. But the tshuvas that I know from him, all the responses that I know from him, it's never a question of he didn't understand the facts. That's definitely not the starting point. So I think my answer to your question is not answering your question, and I did it on purpose.
I just wanted to tell you that when Moshe, my Rebbe, Rev Tendler, many times said, when Rav Moshe came, and this is a hot topic, about brainstem death, lower brainstem death. But Rabbi Tenla many times said that Reb Moshe spent 2.5 years before he made a decision about lower brainstem death. It was not a knee-jerk reaction. He went through the entire Inyan, not only the Torah, but in seeing in emergency rooms and hospitals.
Yeah, I remember. Yeah, I remember him telling us that also when I was in his bioethics class.
Yeah.
I also met with Siamese twins. I don't know if you heard of Tendler say this, but of Tendler's thing with the doctor said he wants to know what the short Jew has to say, the short rabbi has to say.
He's waiting
for the short rabbi's decision.
Short rabbi, yeah, yeah.
That's actually when I first knew Rav Moshe was short. I didn't know he was short before that.
I didn't know when he said that. I thought he was tall, but he was not very tall. He was, yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, that's the. It happens a lot with a lot of these things. Also, there's a certain unspoken rule, I guess, that we're a little bit uncomfortable with anything with electricity. Our knee-jerk reaction when there's some new electrical development, I guess it's really a knee-jerk, it's a sort of conservative knee-jerk reaction to anything new, which is, you know, we start off with it's not allowed, and then, you know, people learn a little bit more about it, and then, okay, fine, maybe this is allowed, but that's not allowed. This, you know, it's not just in politics. It also happens in passing halacha, because, again, people learn more about this stuff. But, yeah. The grammar thing, though, to get the hospitals in Israel use it a lot. To be a little bit more specific, all right, they use it with their automatic doors on Shabbos between different rooms. What happened? Their argument there isn't really they're not sure which step because again they have to have a Maisa in order to say you're not allowed to do it on Shabbos. So their Maisa is walking, and since you don't know which step, so you don't know which Maisa opened the door, so that can't really be considered something that I'm saying is prohibited on Shabbos. The Grumma switches. The idea is that when I am flipping the switch doesn't immediately cause the light to go on. It's random when the circuit goes through. The first person, I think it's the first person that tried doing this was Rav Henkin with his oven. He wanted to have an oven, I think, that was allowed to be used on Shabbos. It was based on a couple of things. One of them was this switch. I might be making a completely confusing. I'm pretty sure I'm right about this, right? Sure. Do you know if I'm correct?
I believe so, was Rev Henkin. I believe so, yeah.
Okay, so yeah. So his idea was that that basically it's a grumma switch, same concept. And the problem with that we had with it was, yeah, great. It might not turn off in 1 second for now, but you and I both know within the next 3 to 5 seconds, this thing's turning on, right?
Right.
So yeah, it might be random when the circuit gets through, but it's completely irrelevant. It's a little bit different than the steps. By the steps, but when I flip the switch, I know something's going to turn on. When I'm walking, I don't know what's causing the thing to turn, what's causing the sensor to get activated. So it's a little bit different. It's a little bit easier when you're talking about the sensor to say that would be permitted versus the switch.
Right, yeah.
Okay.
All right, so we'll come again next week. We're adding one more week of Divrei Torah. And I hope everyone has a good week. And be well. Have a good Shabbos. And everybody else, no, I said I'm the only Syracusan in art, so I'm hoping that we'll survive the snow for the next couple of days. We're expecting snow, ice, rain, you name it. So, anyway, Yasher Koach, very good. Thank you again, Rabbi Cohen. We'll see you next week, Rabbi. Good Shabbos. Take care.
Thank you very much. Have a good Shabbos.
Thank you.